and welcome to this week's episode of the Not-So-Secret Guide to Being a Berkeley Engineer. I'm your host, Laura Vogt, the Associate Director of Marketing and Communications in the College of Engineering. This week, I'm excited to have Christine Joe from, she's one of our staff psychologists from Counseling and the Psychological Services, or CAPS. So Christine, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more about what you do here at Berkeley?
Sounds good. Thank you very much for inviting me. My name is Christine Joe. I do have a Chinese name, Shuang Mei, and it actually means two pieces of jade. I go by Christine because that's easy for students to remember. I've been on this campus, actually working at Berkeley Engineering for a little over 10 years. So when I first got hired, I think at that time the college reached out and says, can we have a staff psychologist over at engineering, set up a satellite office? And so it would be easier for students to access services. And I volunteered immediately. I was like, cool, I love to go. I like to work with engineers. And so that's how the story began. Now it's been about 10 years and our office has grown. Right now we have three actually counselors and Denise and E. You can find our information on the website. I'm sure Laura is going to link it. So we provide counseling services in to students, and but also we consult with faculty and staff, and also sometimes we provide training. That's about me.
And you're able to offer in-person counseling to undergraduate and graduate students, correct?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, because of the COVID, the services has changed quite a bit. So in the past, up till right now, what we've done is that our services are virtual. So there's pros and cons. And the pros is actually, it used to be, unless you're in person, you can't talk to us. And so that restricts. And for example, if some of the students went home in the summer, they won't be able to talk to us. And I've had students also say that, you know, sometimes it's easier, they can take a walk on campus and then same time. And so they're doing two things, and they're getting some exercise, fresh air, get a break, and then at the same time getting counseling. So we are not completely sure for fall. We might just continue to do a hybrid. And so right now, in order to access service, you need to call one of our lines, and it's listed on a website. And so we'll have a brief chat, and depending what you need and also who is available, because our staffs are working a hybrid schedule. Some days we're on campus and some days we're not. So we'll arrange something that actually works for you. And if it's an urgent crisis situation, we highly encourage you to actually walk over to Tan Center. They're still open the same day walking services for students in crisis. And so that hasn't changed. And it's usually, it's mostly the regular appointment and has been more like hybrid model rather than in person.
And let's make sure that everyone that needs to know or wants to know, the engineering website for counseling is engineering.berkeley.edu/counseling.
So I was thinking this year as we did our interview, I really was thinking about how a lot of the students make these pro-con lists when they chose to come to Berkeley, when they were choosing their scheduling. And so I thought it would be interesting to look at mental wellness and counseling through that same light of a pro-con list. So my issue when I first was talking about it is talking about con, because I really don't think there is necessarily a con about counseling and mental health and mental wellness at all. So I like what you had, when we talked about it, made it into more of a con/myth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I thought it was a really interesting idea. I mean, obviously, I've been advocating for mental health all my life. And I'm just like, of course, I can tell you like 100 reasons why you should go talk to a counselor. But this actually pushes me to really think it through, because I've worked with engineering students for about 10 years. And I was just thinking then over the years, based on the kind of experiences I've talked to students, what are some of the challenges? You know, why this is such a great service is why a lot of students are hesitant to access. So first of all, I want to acknowledge that many of us didn't really grow up knowing what counseling is about. And often we associate counseling or mental health with some kind of negative connotations. For example, I can speak from my example. I was born and raised in China. When I was growing up, we don't even have a major in psychology in college. I remember when I left China, this was in 2000, it sounds ages ago, my university for the first time started a major undergrad in psychology. And so I think that just speaks to, like, this is really not a, it's a Western concept. I mean, if you think about the, you know, the first people who do psychoanalysis and Freud and stuff. And then, so I kind of want to acknowledge that. And maybe a lot of the communities, a lot of cultures, I mean, it doesn't mean that we don't care about emotional health, but we probably use different kind of languages. We have different ways to think about it. For example, you know, I, growing up, and we do a lot of like, sort of like, almost like a mindfulness meditation type of practice, but we never really label it like, you know, mental well-being or wellness. It's probably more part of the culture, part of the tradition. And also, you know, a lot of the Buddhist philosophy. So I kind of want to say, you know, like, I don't necessarily feel like when we talk about counseling, a lot of people will say, oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. A lot of the students coming from communities or family or cultural background, and this is something foreign. So, and there's a lot of stigma associated with it. And I've heard my students saying, you know, I don't want to be called crazy. Or if I come to talk to you, I kind of feel weak because that means that I can't really make things happen, or I'm lazy, I'm too lazy, I'm too weak. So there's a lot of us sort of like, you know, I should have no, people feel like it's not more acceptable. I've had students telling me, I'd rather have a breaking bones or like, you know, a broken leg, and I walked into the classrooms and everybody, GSI faculty member, everybody will be like, oh, how are you doing, you know, kind of like visibly show support. But if I have struggled with depression or anxiety, it's something invisible. I mean, it's not something that I want to share, or I have a lot of shame or stigma. I don't know what, how people are going to judge me, how are they going to perceive me. And so I would say it is not like one of those things that people will jump on it. And also, I think it takes a lot of tremendous amount of courage just to acknowledge that, you know, I'm struggling and I need help. I've had students told me that, you know, I found out about your services freshman orientation. You came to one of those big orientation group, but I didn't really work up the courage to come to you, talk to you until like 2 weeks until graduation. And over the years, I've thought about accessing the services, but, you know, just like, and then I was just, as soon as I walked over, I'm like, yeah, maybe I don't need it. So I think a lot of the times it's much easier to pretend things are okay until we like absolutely cannot functioning. So a lot of the times students, it's like they already can't get out of bed, or, you know, they already failed multiple classes, and, you know, they cut off from connection from family and friends, and they're failing out of school. So sometimes, a lot of the times I wish then they could come and talk to me earlier, rather than wait till so late. Yeah, and so that's one of the common challenges, or maybe myths, or, you know, maybe the cons, why people are hesitant to come to counseling. And also, I think there is, counseling is a privilege. And I think even in this country, I would say counseling is a services that's sort of, it's a privilege to people. It's not something like, you know, you have to go to see a doctor if you get sick, you know, like medical, basic medical needs. A lot of the times that, because it costs a lot of money. And so if you actually want to go talk to a counselor, paying out of pocket, it's over like $100 an hour. And some people even charge like $250. I mean, that's a crazy amount of money. Just talk to somebody for an hour, right? And so, and also, it's like, it takes time. You have to commit to it. I mean, a lot of my students say, you know, I could barely eat and sleep. How would I be able to actually make an hour, take an hour to come talk to you? And also sometimes that, you know, I'm not students say, I don't really know if talking to somebody is actually going to help me, because I'm not really sure if they're going to actually understand my situation. So I think all these are actually very valid. And that's what prevents people from actually making the effort to seek out services. And even if you like, say, finally decide to talk to somebody, and then when you are entering to the room, or you're on the phone or on the Zoom, I think back in the head is like, can I really trust this person? Right? You know, because counseling is not, I mean, the kind of questions we ask people, a lot of my students say, I've never really told anybody. So there is a risk, you know, you're taking of opening up. and being vulnerable in the sessions. And also, back in your head, you still have that question, what if it doesn't work? What if it doesn't help me? What if I will be disappointed or rejected? So it is not as easy that if you go see a physical doctor, they ask you, oh, where do you feel the pain? You know, what do you eat? And people usually have less hesitation to open up and talk about those things. And also sometimes that I have to say, I have to acknowledge that sometimes it may not be a good match. Even if you totally go open, take a risk and you open up and you share your story, but because, you know, maybe the counselor has a different style, maybe a different personality, a different approach. It is not one size fits all. And so it's a little bit different. I think, you know, I use the analogy, like if you go to a surgeon and they're doing surgery, and a lot of times the procedure is much more precise, objective, because, you know, you're using the tools to do that. But in counseling, we're using ourselves. And so the counselor is the tool, and then to be able to help you. So whether, even for me over the course of 10 years, and then I connect with most students, but, you know, honestly speaking, some of the students say, you know what, I've tried, but I prefer to talk to a counselor of a different background. Because, you know, thanks for trying, but, you know, I just feel more comfortable. And I think in those cases, I mean, it's totally understandable, and it will help you to find somebody that actually makes you more comfortable. So I think those are kind of like, you know, I was just thinking about like why over the years, a lot of my students, despite knowing these resources, why wouldn't they access, or what are some of the cons or myths of going to counseling?
I think it's great to be able to recognize some of those reasons why students might not want to come in. I know definitely the stigma of being weak is a number one thing that we hear quite often. And it's just, you're not.
Yeah, absolutely. I do want to say that, you know, in order to flip the coin and talking about a little bit of why you should, despite of all these hesitations and stigma. And like I said, you know, like Laura said, you know, being weak. And actually, I would say the mere fact that you worked up the courage to come and ask for help, that shows that you are incredibly strong, because it takes a lot of courage and strength and to actually make that first step, and then to talk to somebody and vocalize that and say, hey, I'm struggling and I feel like I need some help. And I feel like that's actually the first step towards change. Because a lot of the times, if you don't even acknowledge there is a problem, how are you going to solve it, right? And so I really feel like the facing the challenge, acknowledging the challenge is, I mean, pretty much half of the work is done by the time you started to realize this is something that I want to do, I want to change. So I also wanted to sort of talk about this concept that, you know, what is strong? I think a lot of our students growing up, because, you know, a lot of our students have a lot of, you know, sort of challenges in life, and, you know, navigated a lot of, I mean, they're survivors, and they're very resilient. And so a lot of the times the concept is that if I just try harder, and that's actually why the students were able to overcome a lot of challenges. But I think when it comes to mental health, emotional well-being, a lot of times in this kind of like a tough, just push through it, this kind of mentality is actually hurting you. Because that a lot of the times when you are struggling, when you are feeling, you know, feeling a little depressed and, you know, anxious, or I'm struggling, I'm feeling vulnerable. And if you have that harsh and critical voice and say, well, why can't you do it? And why can't you just push through it? And you should be able to do it. Or you're weak if you don't do that. And all these kind of voices is going to actually intensify the symptoms and actually makes you even sort of struggle more.
That makes me think, you hear that word resilient a lot, that yeah, everyone has to be resilient. And resilient doesn't mean forcing yourself through something. It means taking care of yourself to make sure you can get through it in a healthy way.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of the times it's not just on your own. I think that concept needs to be changed. I understand a lot of our students have been on their own all their lives. And because, you know, for whatever reason, there's not a lot of people there for them. So they kind of just like, I can beat it. I can do it by myself. But coming to Berkeley is really a huge challenge because academically, the speed of the classes and the competition and the pressures, the stress, right? You know, I think a lot of the times when people find, okay, I can barely handle it. And now I'm like collapsing. But the thing is that I like, even the strongest person in the world, they would not be able to overcome all the challenges in life unless they have a solid support system. And which means that you actually have people in your lives and you can go to and talk to, whether that's family or friends or colleagues or mentors. And so these are the group of people that's actually going to be there with you to help you to go through things. And I think that's an incredibly important kind of actually a task when we are sort of, I mean, if you think about the college, it's a separation. You are, you know, a young adult. You're from an adolescent and, you know, emerging young adult. You're growing your first time leaving home. And so you are no longer just with your parents and siblings all the time. And now you're on your own. It is time to create your own connections and, you know, the chosen family, right? Who do you want to make friends with, or who do you want to date, or I mean, who do you want to hang out with or make projects together, talk to or seek out? So I think that is a very actually challenging task. And a lot of the times that students have problems navigating and they get hurt, right? I mean, that's why we have breakups and we have fights and conflicts. But what the concept of being strong, I've seen the student, the most resilient student I've seen, the most successful ones. If I always ask them this question, so who do you talk to if you're struggling? They give me like a list of 10 names. And I say, well, what do you do if you're not happy? And they give me like a 20 things they can do in their lives. And so the more tools, the more resources, the more people you have in your life, and the stronger you are. So I think that's one of the things I wanted to really focus on that. You know, like life is not really, we're going to face challenges in life. It's not about not ever failing, but it's how do you bounce back? How do you learn from those mistakes? And in terms of another thing, I've talked a little bit about a lack of access, resources, right? And so here on campus, fortunately, you do have access and actually it's free. And so we have a main office, the Counseling and Psychological Services, which is located on the third floor of the Tan Center. So that's our main office. And we have counselors on call pretty much from 10 to 5, Monday through Friday. And so you can call on the same day. And actually, we changed our model these days. And when you call, you can actually get a same day appointment. So it's much faster, quicker access. And then we have the satellite office at COE. So we're at 241 Bechtel. This is for undergraduate students. So we have three counselors here. And then I describe, you know, how do you utilize? And the satellite office is more like a primary care office. And so whether, you know, it's not something urgent, you really don't need to talk to somebody on the same day, but you're kind of curious and I have something I'm going through. I kind of want to find somebody who know maybe more, a little bit more about engineering, not only just about mental health, but also about the college, the system, the resources within the college, just want to have a conversation. And I can't wait. I mean, it's not like I need to talk to them right now and I can make an appointment maybe next week. So that's more appropriate for the satellite office. And so I do want to say that because our model has changed, the clinical model, it used to be we have like 8 sessions for free per year for all the students. But right now we're changing the model into, it's called one at a time. It's called OAT. So what does that mean? One at a time. So which means that we will be able to talk to students pretty quickly. If it's not within the same day, it's probably going to be within the same week. So we will be able to get me used to be by about midterm. I mean, everybody's full. Then you're going to take like 3 weeks to getting, but then at that time, you know, it's almost finals. So right now the turnaround is much faster. So we have a quick access, but there's no expectation or maybe not necessarily opportunity for ongoing treatment. So basically if you think about traditional counseling, that's when you talk to them once a week, ongoing. Like you could do that for years. But our model is more about let's talk and let's, you know, forget about all the history. Let's assess where you are right now. Let's brainstorm ideas about solutions. And then we'll, at the end of the session, we'll talk about, you know, do you still need to follow up? And, you know, do you feel like you're good for now? You want to try a little things. And if you try a little bit of stuff and you wanted to connect with us, and so feel free to call back and then we'll talk again. So this model is that it works perfectly. Actually, I would say for a lot of the majority of the Berkeley students, because we actually did research, we look at how often students access services. The highest number of students actually access this counseling services about 1 to 3 times, and actually 1 being the highest number. So actually it fits. But if you do have an ongoing therapy need, and we can also meet and we can try to talk about how do we make it happen, more than likely it's going to be through community resources, whether it's through your insurance or low fee clinics. We'll have a conversation and we'll help you to get connected. So the last thing I wanted to say is that I talk about, you know, this idea, can I trust the therapist? So for people who are not familiar, I want to talk about confidentiality. So counseling is a little bit different than you go talk to your advisor or a professor, because it's confidential. So unless you disclose you're seriously thinking about hurting yourself or another person, or if there's abuse of a child, vulnerable adult, or dependent, and those are cases, then we'll have to bridge. Other than that, what happens in the counseling stays in the counseling. So, and also talking to a counselor versus talking to friends and family is a little bit different in the sense the counselor is more neutral, and they don't really have a lot of the times I've had students telling me that their friends just have a very strong opinions and this is what you should do, rather than actually trying to understand their perspective. So the counseling process, the first thing is actually to listen to you and to really understand where you're coming from a neutral perspective, and also create a safe place for you to reflect and for you to think about what is the best strategy and what do I want to do about my life? Because I believe you are the expert in being you, because I only meet you like, you know, for 25 minutes. I wouldn't possibly know who you are. So my job is to really help you to create a space where you could engage in some kind of self-reflection and trying to find the solution that works best for you. A lot of the times the counselors need the students to help. And so I tell my students, I need you to help me to help you. So if you don't understand you, or for them to actually help you. So it's a collaborative relationship. And, you know, it's a place that's actually more for you to sort of figure out what's the best solution. It's true. There might not be a good match. It takes time to build relationships, connections. Also, that you can have a lot of power in terms of what you want to do in counseling. What do you want to talk about? And how do you utilize the time that you have with the counselor?
And where are the different entry points outside of maybe counseling of where they could get services or resources or learn more about resources?
Yeah. You know, that's another thing. You know, sometimes students come to talk to me about academic struggles, right? Even though I'm not an academic advisor, but we do know relatively me because we've worked with students for so many years. And so we know other resources. For example, one of the things that a lot of students don't know is DSP. Program is disabled student program. And so when you have a diagnosis, it doesn't matter if it's a physical health or mental health, and you will be able to register with DSP. With DSP comes with a lot of accommodations. For example, you will be able to reduce course load. And then sometimes you can get more times on exam. Sometimes then you will get, you know, extra notes. And you can take exam in a separate room, free of distractions. You could maybe get more time on the exam. So there's a lot of benefit. And a lot of students, they really struggle, but they really don't even know that DSP services exist. And also we can connect you with other programmings. Like, you know, we have a center, we have offering tutoring services. We can also connect you with advisors. And so we can, the idea is that then we all work together to support you rather than so individually. And so we can sort of create this kind of what I call like a support system for you, right? And so each one of the staff member or we can collaborate and we can help you together.
So I noticed that you wrote in our notes here that at the end of the day, it's the students' decisions. So yep. What is your message that you want to give them about that?
Yeah, I want to say that you cannot really force anybody into counseling and it's not going to work. I've had students told me that they were as minors when they were little and their parents or teachers, they dragged them in to talk to a counselor and just never worked. So I wanted to really emphasize on that. I mean, your autonomy and your readiness. So it's not a really a question is, does any one of us need counseling? I would say probably 90% of the people can use that services, but it's also about, are you ready to talk about it? Are you ready to make changes? Are you ready to actually do some hard work? And also sometimes, and I've had students come to counseling, they say, well, what happened? I feel like I'm getting worse. You know, I'm even more sad, more anxious. So I also want to normalize that. And a lot of the times it gets worse before it actually gets better. The reason is that when you are sort of holding on to a lot of this stuff and you never had people to talk about, and when you open it up and sometimes and you could experience a lot of emotions and you could even feel like bad, but then you're not alone, and so you're not doing this by yourself, and so you work with a counselor then who will help you to try to figure out what kind of coping mechanism you have, what kind of strategy you could use, and what kind of support you can seek out. So a lot of the times I think it's much easier to bury things and pretend everything is okay. And also I hear this from a lot of students, and they say, you know, everybody else seems to be doing great. I'm like the only one, right? And then I say, you know, this, all my roommates, all my classmates, all my friends, nobody seems to be struggling, but that's really far from true. Everybody struggles. We all struggles. I mean, I'm particularly, you know, I think the pandemic is such a humbling experience, right? And it sort of literally affects every human being on this planet. And we all struggle. I mean, even as a counselor, I mean, people say, well, you must know everything what to do with the pandemic. Not necessarily, you know, if I have to work from home with two toddlers, my parents and, you know, everybody, that drove me crazy. You know, I felt like, man, I'm getting depressed. I can't get out of the house, can't go out to eat. So we are all human beings and it's just, you know, part of life. I mean, being, you know, a human, we struggle. And so a lot of the times I tell my students, I can't really rewrite your story. I mean, what happened? We can't really change. A lot of the times even students come talk to me, what can you do? I don't have a magic wand and kind of change your situation or come up with like a huge amount of money and solve all the problems. But I think what we can do is we can sort of have a different perspective or interpretation of what the story is about and what happened and what's the impact of what happened affect you moving forward. And so, I mean, so, you know, we all know the childhood memories and then something happened when you were five. When you were 10 years old, you look back, you might feel differently about it. When you were 20 years ago, looking back at what happened at five, you probably feel even more differently. Maybe when you are 30 and you imagine 40 and 50 years old, right? And you might, what happened didn't change, but how you feel about it might be completely different. So I also want to say that, you know, college is like the perfect time of your life where everything, anything is possible. So I used to work at VA, and those particularly from Vietnam vets. I mean, they tend to, like, you know, I remember I was talking to them and they tell me stories of, you know, what happened in the war and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's almost like they're stuck in that time of the, you know, in their lives. And it's really hard to help them to get out of it. I mean, and then they will always tell me, you know, Christy, I'm 50 something, I'm 60 years old. I mean, this is who I am. You know, that's it. You know, I'm kind of like, this is the end of my life. You know, it is what it is. But I never got that sense working with college students. You know, you're like 18, 19, 20. And I often, you know, sometimes I have students who had a first breakup and they tell me, oh my gosh, I'm going to never be able to find anybody for the rest of my life. I will end up alone and I will die sad and whatever. And I say all these things. And I look at their chart. I was like, just hold on 1 second. How old are you? They're like 19. And I was like, you really think by, you know, 19 and this is the rest of your life? I mean, I don't know, like another 70, 80 years is going to be like this. And so I really feel like there's infinite possibilities at this age. So no matter what kind of challenges and you bump into, you will be able to overcome it with the right support, with the resources, with yourself and, you know, and friends and family, and you will be able to overcome. So yeah. And if you feel like, you know, at some point you're like, oh, my friends are busy, my family don't understand, I don't have anybody to talk to. So remember to give us a call. We are always here. We're here to listen. We're here to support.
So we're going to make sure that we have links for University Health Services or CAPS. And I'll also include a link for the groups page and then definitely our engineering satellite office webpage.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. This information is so, I always feel like when I get to interview you, I'm like, I needed to hear that.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of the times and it's really hard because there's so much resources and then when you are first starting, I mean, you're so busy and just catching up, right? You know, academic stuff is overwhelming. So a lot of the times people don't even know services and how to access. And so I would say, feel free to check it out. And, you know, office is 241 Bechtel and there's a phone number listed on there. Just give us a call and then we'll go from there.
Well, thank you for your time today.
They're welcome.
And thank you everyone for tuning in to the Not So Secret Guide to Being a Berkeley Engineer. I look forward to podcasting with you throughout the summer.